We're the number one most downloaded app that entire, or not downloaded, number one most hunted product that month, I believe. So we got a hit that day. And then that week, they have like a weekly newsletter. Then they have a monthly newsletter. In each one of those, we got more and more listeners.
Hi, welcome to the Founders with Pet podcast, where I interview amazing entrepreneurs from diverse backgrounds about their journeys, successes, failures, and lessons along the way. On this episode, we have Shiel Manat. He's an old friend of mine and also from Chicago, but he now just recently started BTV, Better Tomorrow Ventures. It is a $75 million seed stage venture fund focused on building the future of fintech, doing pre-seed and seed round of fintech companies. Welcome to the show, Shiel.
Great to be here, Buck.
Yeah. One of the questions people ask, you know, because people think I have a huge network, and they're like, so how do you know these people? Oh, I think we met through Attorney Fee. Do you remember that company?
Oh, yeah. Is that it? I was thinking it was through Rishi Shah had like a mailing list.
That's probably. Yeah, those things are like you were doing Attorney Fee then. Yeah. And not Attorney Fee, Fee Fighters. Yeah. And because I also happen to know Attorney Fee from Chicago, I get too conflated.
Yeah. Yeah. So we met through Fee Fighters. I think, you know, at that time, the Chicago ecosystem was pretty new and you got to know the other people involved.
It's a small circle. You show up at a startup meetup and it's like the same 20 faces.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, you know, for sure.
And then I think you made the right move of moving. And then I was a late follower of most Chicago people who fled to the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Well, I would say you've played your career quite well. I'm going to humble brag, you know, for Shiel because he's too humble to brag, but Shiel has made over 100 investments, either through personal, through 500 startups as under 500 fintech, and then lately his 17 investments through BTV. So we're going to pick his brain about what makes a good pitch, what makes a good investment, what makes a good founder, because you've been, you know, you have so many more data points than most of us ever had.
Yeah, happy to chat about that. That's what I do. So
yeah,
very easy to talk about this.
So you focus primarily on fintech, right?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. We think about fintech in a very broad way. So while we focus on fintech, I think there are a lot of companies that today may not look to you like a fintech company, but to us they do. So an example would be there are a lot of vertical SaaS companies selling into SMBs. Like, let's say you run a self-storage company or a yoga studio or a barber, then there's some software product that you're using to manage your everyday life. And it's kind of like what you use to schedule, it's what you use to accept payments. And we think that a lot of these companies will have fintech features down the line. So we're actually open to investing in that kind of company. We also think many marketplaces will have fintech features down the line. So we're open to investing in those kinds of companies too.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at for example, like Intuit, even though they started out as accounting software, now some of their tools, well, their financial tools, right? Like, hey, we can cut you a check today because looking at your track record, you know, your clients seem to pay you on time or something.
So That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in terms of like, when you look at these companies, you know, I look at, well, like Flexport, Kin Insurance, Buffer that you've made. What are some of the, you know, what is your, do you have a framework or process or system in terms of like how you think about investing in your thesis?
I do. Funny you should ask. And this is not like, I don't think about every company I'm meeting and think like, do each one of these things and give them a score. Nothing like that. It's sort of like in my head, but sort of, I think to explain to other people, broadly speaking, we'll call it the 6T framework. T like Thailand.
Look at you, making it relevant to me.
Yeah. So we'll start with the most important. And then after that, we'll go into, there's no order after the first one. but mostly because I couldn't possibly keep a track of it in my head. The first one is the most important, and that is the team. So I'm thinking about the team in that, like, are these the right people for the job? Like, can they execute? Do they have the right background? So ideally some domain knowledge or expertise. Is there a good team dynamic? And I think the way that I assess the team first and foremost is, you know, it's the team, but it's really the founder or the CEO, generally the person who's pitching me. And so I think, does this person have a very articulate, clear vision of the future that they're trying to build? And if they have an articulate, clear future of the built vision they're trying to build, then they'll be able to build a strong culture, which will bring on, you know, they'll be able to sell employees to come on board. They'll be able to convince customers to come on board. And then, of course, like, it also is important to bring on the next set of investors. And so I think all of that is really important. And so having that strong vision is really important for that team. So number one, T is team.
It's like that guy from Age of Empires that converts the priest. You want that guy to be able to bring in everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think most people underestimate that. Like, the at a certain point, the job of a CEO basically becomes setting the vision, telling the story, and getting people to buy into that story. And so it's recruiting is so crucial, especially in 2021, when everybody has any number of places they can go to work. Having a recruiting superpower is really important.
Yeah. I don't think companies, smaller companies, underestimated or could even foresee the impact of how competitive COVID created, because now, you know, like, my advantage is, oh yeah, you can work from home, you can work from anywhere.
Yeah.
Now everybody can say that. So that's just gone.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay. So number one T was team. Let's say number two is traction. So, like, how much have they built so far? Traction, I think a lot of people think about traction in terms of revenue, but I don't just mean revenue. I mean, in fintech, most of the companies we invest in don't have any revenue. So have they gone through some regulatory hurdle? Have they solved some partnerships? Have they figured out what it's going to cost to acquire a customer? Do they have customer development done? Do they know what the marketing channels are? And then, you know, has there been any traction on fundraising? So all those things are important on the traction side. Then we'll go to tech. Like, and I think about tech as also being product. So what is the product? I love, personally, anytime we meet a company, I'm downloading the product, I'm playing with it, I'm watching videos, all that kind of stuff. So, like, can this team build a great product? And there, you know, one of the things I think is critical is, how fast are they iterating on the tech? Do they have some killer advantage because of their tech team? That's tech, the number three T. Number four, I'm going to say, is trends. So, like, and trends and TAM, total addressable market. And this one's really important. Like, if they're wildly successful, will this be a huge company? And are, is the market growing? Are the trends in their favor? So this is a really important one. I think, you know, some people say TAM doesn't matter because TAM can grow. I think that's true, but I also would say, like, we've had a lot of investments where, even though things went great, the company did really well, we realized, like, you can get to a point where it's a $200, $300, $400 million company, but it's hard to grow into that, you know, billion plus company. And what most people don't realize is, today, venture capitalists are looking, we're only looking to invest in companies that can have a $10 billion outcome. Because if you think about the fund construction, what all needs to go right, that's kind of what we need to get a great return on our fund. So the goalposts have moved. So, you know, you need a huge market. Sort of another T is terms. So, you know, are they being reasonable in terms of the amount of money they want to raise and the amount of dilution they want to take? These days, you know, seed rounds, we invest at seed. And I would say like the valuations we've invested at vary between $2.5 million on the low side up to $15 million on the high side. And it's gotten a lot harder. Like there's more and more competition for dollars. Valuations are going up. And so there are a lot of companies who are raising valuations higher than where we invest. That's fine. It just isn't a fit for us.
Right.
And we also sort of think like we spend a lot of time with our portfolio companies. We need to own enough of the company for it to be worth our while. So we have a minimum 10% ownership in our companies. So if we can't get that, it's a non-starter. We're not going to be able to get there on the company. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we went through 5 T's, team, traction, tech, TAM, and terms. And the last T is totally random. And that is kind of a bullshit T, but it's a T because like, this is like, do I like this person? Do I want to spend my nights and weekends with them? You know, we spend a lot of time with our portfolio. We, you know, I've spoken at weddings from my founders, like, is this somebody I want to hang out with? Like, could I be stuck in a place with this one? And so there's like a, just a random, we have so many choices of who we can partner with. Is this the person I want to be spending my time with? And so that's the
maybe time, totally random, right? It's not a time. Totally random. Time is a, like, do I want to spend time with them? You know, give up my time with them to give to them.
I love that. Totally love that.
Because you only have so much. Yeah, so much. Yeah, I was trying to think of a word, right? Relationship, clicking. But I think you giving up your time for them.
Time. Love it.
Yeah, then you can fit it on. Now it's a T-shirt.
It's a T-shirt. So wait, what do we have? We have team traction, tech, TAM/trends, terms, and time. Love it.
Yeah, awesome. And so, you know, kind of segue into this, you know, you had a podcast for a while, six plus years called The Pitch.
Yep. Yep.
You are way ahead of podcasts and you sold it to Gimlet as well. So was that a way to get deal flow for, you know, that was one thought I had.
Yeah. So I would say like when I started the podcast, I was completely unknown, just like a random schmo who had moved to San Francisco recently, trying to make some angel investments, had a little bit of capital from the exit. And I thought, hey, what happened was I was sick one day, sat at home, turned on the TV, watched Shark Tank. And I was like, hey, this is highly entertaining, but also very unreal. Like, this is not how the world really works of investing. And so I thought, like, what if I just recorded the pitches that people give me? Like, would that be entertaining? And so I did that. Initially, it was like, I just turned record on while people were pitching me.
And then their consent somehow? Or
yeah, I got their consent. And then, you know, it kept growing from there and ended up becoming pretty successful. We had our first sort of level of success was getting on Product Hunt. And we got, I think we had like 10 or 15,000 weekly listeners after being on Product Hunt. It was huge for us. We were at that time, which was July 2015, we were the number one most downloaded app that entire, or not downloaded, number one most hunted product that month, I believe. So we got a hit that day. And then that week, they have like a weekly newsletter, and then they have a monthly newsletter. And each one of those, we got more and more listeners. And then, you know, we're chugging along for a little while. January of 2017, we were recording every other week at that point. January of 2017, Apple decided to feature us. So if you opened up the podcast app back then, the Apple podcast app, we would be at the top banner, The Pitch. And that was pretty cool.
Apple.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And sort of quickly after that, Gimlet reached out to us. They had a podcast called Startup, and they thought that we'd be a perfect accompaniment to Startup. So sort of February of 2017, they decided to acquire us. And then we sort of took a few months off the air while we went through that transition, had a real studio in Brooklyn, all this kind of stuff, had real editors, not just amateurs like us. And then we relaunched in June of 2017. And it's been great. You know, that podcast has now run its course. So Gimlet decided not to renew us late last year, but it was a great run.
Tell me about the podcast a bit in terms of now that I'm starting my own. So it's like, what were some of the things you figured out, you know, aside the great ideas for getting traction here, like what were some of the things, the mechanics of having a podcast as a business?
Yeah. So I think, you know, you need to understand what you want out of it. Obviously for us, it was not about making money. It was about building my brand and meeting interesting people. And that, you know, mission accomplished sort of, and on an ancillary basis, we did end up making money. We didn't start out with that in mind, but, you know, towards the end, we were making, you know, towards the end of, in 2017, when we sold, we were doing like, you know, hundreds of thousands in revenue from an ad basis. And then I think with Gimlet, it was a lot more than that. I think maybe close to a million, but that was not our original goal. Our goal was to like do something that people find interesting, meet interesting people. And you know, that was mission accomplished. Let's see, what else did I learn? I learned like, you know, it was important to keep iterating and take feedback always, just like understand what people like and what people don't like. And then, you know, having interesting guests that have their own platforms helps you grow your platform.
Did you find that like Shield, the brand, is kind of, you built a brand? Because I felt like, you know, you made a name, quite a name for yourself in the Bay Area, coming from Chicago. Is this how you primarily built it, or was it the 500 or?
Yeah, I don't think it was the podcast. I think early on the podcast, but like, as the podcast, you know, moved on to Gimlet, I was no longer like the face of the podcast. And so it became much, much less about me. Yeah. So I don't think that was necessarily it. I think a lot of like Twitter presence. And then I think it's been really helpful that all I do is fintech, because people know like, oh, like I'm doing something in fintech, I gotta talk to Shield. Like
you're the guy.
It's a lot harder. I think it'd be a lot harder for me if I wasn't focused on an area.
Well, it comes back to that advice, focus, right? Focus.
Yeah, totally. And it's hard. It's hard advice to take. And I actually am not great at taking my own advice, but it has been what's been successful for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, not focusing, to tell me about Thistle and the food and health company. That didn't seem like fintech. So now I'm going to like, if you're going to like, oh, focus.
Yeah. So this, you nailed it. It's exactly right. Because I was saying, I don't focus, or I have not been good at taking my own advice. And it's funny because it's actually a part of the story I often leave out, is like, I don't talk about Thistle that much because it doesn't fit in the narrative that I'm trying to tell about myself, which is like,
sorry,
I've been doing fintech all along. Okay, so Thistle, the idea was, we want people to live healthy lives, and starting with food. And we ourselves, me and my co-founders, we're just extremely busy people. I was a management consultant. My one co-founder was a lawyer, my other was a banker, and we were choosing convenience over health. And so So my co-founders and I were choosing convenience over health. We were, you know, it was a lot easier to run downstairs and grab a quick bite, a sandwich, burger, whatever, than it was to make a healthy meal or find something healthy. And so we thought, what if there already was a healthy meal in your fridge? You could just eat it directly or reheat it quickly. And so we thought, let's do it. Let's make healthy food that's already in people's fridges. And so we do it on a subscription delivery basis. And we thought there's something wrong with the existing models of delivery, which at the time there were these companies, Sprig, Munchery, Spoon Rocket. I don't know if you heard of them, but they were big names at that time. And they raised a ton of money and they all petered out and they all died for, I think, a bunch of reasons. But one, the on-demand nature is just really hard to do, like delivery. Like, I want a salad right now, get it to me for 12 bucks. It's just impossible to make the math work there. So our food averages 12 or 13 bucks, super healthy, but delivered on a subscription basis. So you actually get 3 deliveries a week. And, you know, we mix it up such that you don't get bored and you can customize a bunch of different things. And, you know, it's been great. We deliver, you know, tens of thousands of meals a week now and all on the West Coast today, but probably going to expand to the East Coast later this year.
Amazing. So it's kind of like that Soylent company where the founder was just eating unhealthy all the time, working on a startup and then trying to make something that easier to,
my co-founders would really cringe if you compared us to Soylent. Because
your stuff is really healthy, like real it's food.
It's real food. It's, you know, fresh from the farm, yeah, delivered to us and then delivered to your door. It's very different. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, in terms of the goal was convenience. Yeah. We just went about it a different way.
Convenience, healthy food. Yeah. Take us back a little bit. You know, you said you were a management consultant. How did your entrepreneurial journey start for, you know, kind of people, audience who are just starting their journey?
Yeah. Well, I think I've always been very entrepreneurial. So like when I was a kid, I knew I wanted to be in business and I would do small time stuff like fix computers in the neighborhood, that kind of stuff. I was a DJ. And so I think that's really where my entrepreneurial background started. And then, you know, over the years, I went down the corporate path for a little while, but always was like thinking like, I don't know if this is for me. I'm not very good at this. I should do my own thing. And then ultimately the opportunity came along with Fee Fighters. Sean, who's the CEO, and I worked together at BCG, the consulting firm. And then he left to start this company. And I said, I want to leave BCG. And then I ended up joining him. And that was a payments company we started. He left a little bit before me, but in 2010. And then, you know, that was fairly successful. We sold to Groupon in 2012. And
that was a good time to sell to Groupon.
It was a good time to sell to Groupon. That is true. And, you know, Groupon was truly at its peak at that time. Actually, let's look at Groupon's stock price now. Groupon is now a $1.5 billion company. And let's see, we sold in March 2012. Okay, so
didn't Google offer like $6 billion or something at some point, something like that?
Google offered $6 billion. Okay, but when we sold, Groupon was worth $15 billion.
Wow.
Today it's worth 1.35. So really fallen off quite a bit. Kind of like never hear about it anymore. Remember how much Groupon was in the news? Like literally every day, it was all people were talking about.
Yeah.
And then it just completely fell off.
Well, you know, it was a very exciting time for Chicago startups. It felt like for some people, it was like, oh, Chicago tech is finally here. You know, we got something. And yeah, it was, you know, my small circle of startup friends belonged at the time to two camps. It was like, join Groupon, like you were part of that camp. And then the other part was like, join Obama as he was getting elected. You know, it was like joining like kind of part of his election campaign or technology. Yeah. So folks like Harper,
Yeah.
Some other folks, you know, like, is this Vortex?
Those guys took the winning strategy.
Yeah, the winning strategy. I don't know. You cashed out, so I don't know. But
it wasn't so bad. But yeah.
Yeah, but it was like that, those two vortexes. And then I was kind of busy, heads down, trying to do my own thing. But, you know, in hindsight, maybe I should have just taken one of the, join the light side or the dark side.
I think you're doing just fine.
It's funny, you're also like not the first DJ turned entrepreneur that I've spoken to. Like there seems to be also like a South Asian DJ or entrepreneur. Like there must be something.
Who else
there.
You at?
This guy, ex-Googler, Prakash Chandran. He was a DJ. Yeah, I'll introduce him. He's doing a no-code backend. So that's okay. You know, kind of like a trendy thing these days too. Like speaking of TAM and you know.
Totally.
Theme.
Huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So if you weren't doing fintech, what are you the themes or trends that you are looking at?
If I wasn't investing in fintech, or like, is it like, what would I do?
Like
if
focused. I wasn't an investor? Yeah. No. Well, those are both good questions. If you weren't a fintech investor, what other trends would you be hopping on?
Yeah, I think if I wasn't a fintech investor, I can't think of another category that I love in particular. Maybe marketplaces. I think there's a lot that I need to understand about them, but I think it's a great space. I kind of love, in particular, network effects businesses. Like I think one thing that I struggle with, and this is true in my portfolio too, is like companies that are just spending tons of money on Facebook acquiring customers is something that like I really struggle with. So like I'm looking to do more companies that don't have that struggle. It's hard to find on the consumer side, but I think, you know, I'd like to invest in more of those kind of companies, but I don't think I would choose a particular area. Like I don't, you know, I'm not that interested in healthcare or education. So if I had to choose, I don't know, SaaS or marketplace, probably.
And if you weren't an investor, what would you be doing?
I think I would be maybe like a documentary filmmaker. And it would be very travel focused. I love to travel. You know, I've been to, I think, 75 countries. And I probably, the other thing I would do is like, I do feel like I've found the thing that sort of simultaneously I love doing. Like it makes me happy. I think I'm starting to get good at it and it's like a lucrative career. So like, it's hard to find the intersection of those three things. And I think like in another life, I could be just like living, you know, very cheaply in some third world country, just like figuring it out, like starting small time businesses, and that I'd probably be very happy doing that.
I like the travel angle. You know, unfortunately COVID kind of makes it hard, but you know, watching now that I'm home more, watching some of these YouTube food channels, it's like,
oh yeah,
that would be so fun to just be eating and cataloging that. So there's
that
something
would be
there.
Really fun. Yeah, there's something there. I have friends that are big like creators, and it's such an interesting world to me. You know, like I feel like for my job and just generally, I have to be somewhat self-promotional, and it actually like, it comes fairly natural to me. I can promote myself, but the amount of self-promotion that some of these people have to do, I could not do.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing VCs being more self-promotional. I think it started with blogs, right? But you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Gary Tan's YouTube channel. That's quite impressive.
Totally. Yeah.
And Justin Kahn's getting in on it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing great. I personally don't want, I personally like can't sit through video like that. I really like reading stuff, but I can't sit through videos like that because, you know, either it's too slow or too fast. It's never just right. Versus reading, like if I don't get something, I can read over it over and over and over again. If I like don't care about something, I can skim over it. So
yeah. Yeah. It's funny that pre-pandemic, I've never spent so much time on YouTube, but now that I'm home all the time, I consume a lot more more video content than ever before.
You're
quite active on Twitter. You know, I think you touched on that Twitter, you know, kind of just being always on was something that contributed to your success and just being generally
totally
approachable, available.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, didn't you do some sort of dating thing on Twitter? So can you tell me more about
it? I knew it was going to come up. So a year ago, there was something called the Zoom Bachelorette. And the Zoom Bachelorette was a bachelorette style show. So there was one woman and there were 12 of us guys. And we were competing for her affection. Her name was Katya. And I was selected as one of the bachelors. And things did not work out for me on that show. I came in third out of 12. But the producers of the show decided that I was the audience favorite. So when they wanted to do the next one, it was a Zoom Bachelor, they chose me as a Zoom Bachelor. It was me with 11 beautiful women doing various things.
All on Twitter, right?
My heart. It was on Twitch.
On Twitch.
It was a video based thing. And it was really fun. I had a blast.
That's so cool. So cool. What ended up happening after the show?
So after the show, I met the winner was this woman, Anna. She's wonderful. We went on a couple of dates, but I don't think, you know, I think we're friends now, but didn't feel a real spark. And then by virtue of being on the show, a bunch of people reached out to me and said, "Hey, you're single. I like you on the show. I want to set you up with so-and-so, or I'm interested." So like, it just ended up that a lot of people wanted to set me up. And one of those setups worked out really well. And that has led to my current girlfriend. We've been dating for 8 months now.
Oh, I expected something totally different where people reached out because they know of you and they want you to invest or something. Did that also happen?
It didn't. No, not exactly in that way.
Oh.
Yeah.
didn't quite translate. I think they don't overlap the two populations, maybe the cohorts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How does one, you know, if someone's got a fintech startup, what is the best way to get your attention?
Yeah, I would say, you know, build an awesome product and tell me about it in some way. I think two of the last three investments I made were cold outreach. So I totally opened to cold outreach.
Sweet. Thank you. Well, this has been awesome. And do you want to promote, just tell us a bit more about Better Tomorrow Ventures as we end?
Yeah, sure. So like I said, we're a $75 million seed stage fintech fund investing globally. And I think, you know, I think the difference between us and other funds is myself and Jake are both former operators and we love what we do. We love helping portfolio companies. And I think that comes through if you talk to our portfolio. So, you know, if you're a fintech company starting something, please reach out to me. And then, you know, if you live on the West Coast, check out thistle.co, thistle. And, you know, it's a great way to get healthy food to you without too much effort on your end.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. You've always been very gracious with your time, even with me. And thank you again for taking the time to be on this show.
Happy to do it, buddy.
Yeah.
And great to see you on video.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Founders with Peck. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform or our YouTube channel. If you leave us a review, I'll be sure to shout it out. And if you have any questions, you can tweet me on Twitter.